Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
Right, this week on the PR Moment podcast, I'm interviewing Greg Jones, who's Managing Director at Mischief. Mischief has a fee income of circa £5 million, employs about 55 people, and as many of you will know, it's part of the Engine Group. Last year, it grew at about, well, between 6 and 7%. Its sister agency within Engine is MHP. Now, Greg's a rare example of a PR creative who's got the top job. He started his career at Shine, before stints at Slice, which at the time was Engine's consumer PR firm, before moving to M&C Saatchi. He co-founded his own business called Glass Jar, which we'll talk about later, and he then moved on to Splendid and finally made it back to Engine, joining Mischief as creative director before getting the MD job last year when Frankie Corry left. Now, before we start, as ever, a bit of admin from me. If you are interested in the best practice of PR measurement and evaluation, do please take a look at our PR Analytics programme. We've got speakers from Facebook, Diageo, the UK Government's Communications Service, and many more. All the details on the homepage of PRMoment.com. And we've just launched a brand new conference talking about the evolution of purpose, rebuilding trust in business. We've got speakers from Roche, ASICS, Nestle, and many more. And again, all the details on the PRMoment homepage. Finally, as ever, thank you to our PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. Greg, welcome.
Hello, Ben.
That made me laugh. I'm sure you can edit that somehow to make us both sound cool. Now, Greg, Mischief's had an interesting story in the last 10 years, hasn't it? Should we just bring our listeners up to speed? It was founded by Mitch Kay and Rachel Bell. It was then sold to Engine. Shortly after that, Mitch left and Frankie Corry came in. And then to mine, and I suspect many other people's surprise, Frankie left last summer. You took the top job. So that was a sort of my summary. But
yeah, yeah.
Just talk us through that process from your angle.
Well, I was actually at the birth of Mischief because I was at Shine with Rachel and Mitch when Mischief was born in 2006. So Mitch took...
It's all getting a bit medical for me. But yeah, go on.
Okay.
Go on.
We've come full circle. So Mitch took, I think, four clients. Rachel gave him some office space, some support staff, some of the Shine staff. And from there, Mischief grew and grew. And as you say, Mischief was sold to the Engine Group, I think, in 2011. So 5 years after it was formed.
Which isn't, I mean, it's easy to, that is not long, is it?
No.
I mean, it grew, there's lots of agencies that do all right. But the cycle from start to sell being only 5 years, that has not been replicated too often, has it?
Absolutely. Well, Mitch did a phenomenal job. And obviously, you know, in partnership with Dan from a creative perspective, the people he hired, the clients he won, the hustle he had to grow that business was phenomenal.
Hustle, that's a good phrase.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that hustle has remained part of the Mischief DNA from the day that it was formed to where we are now.
Right. But it was interesting, and this is a few years back now, but from an outsider's looking in perspective, when Mitch left Mischief, everyone, I think, thought, and then Frankie came in, and as ever, these things are a bit of a cycle, but it was a bit of a, I don't know about recovery, but and stabilisation, and then growth, wasn't it? And so everyone went, ah, so it was, you know, so it was okay, but it's one of those businesses that has had an interesting.
Absolutely.
The leadership has changed a fair bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you think about Mitch as the first phase of Mischief, you think about Frankie as the second phase.
Right.
I think we're in phase 3.0 now of Mischief.
Okay.
You know, 14 years on, and how many agencies can get to 14? How many of those creative agencies that get to 14 and still retain their heat? Whether
that's
in terms of winning business, winning clients, winning awards. The kind of work we do.
Well, you do have a genre of work, don't you? Which we'll come on to that in a minute. But it's you know, you're right. You've kept that.
Yeah.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
Were you as surprised as the rest of us when Frankie left? You've known each other for a little while.
I was surprised. Right. Absolutely. I mean, I can't comment on, you know, necessarily. I can't speak on her behalf.
No.
We were surprised. I think we all understood.
Well, I think she'd always wanted that in-house.
And, you know, she'd done an MBA at Henley, and my sense was that there was something else out there for her, having done, what, five 6 years.
Well, do you know, it's a recurring theme of these podcasts is that agency MD, CEO job, however you want to describe it, it's a tough gig, right? The only person who's done it for a really prolonged period of time was Colin Byrne. You know, yes. The rest of them from when I started years and years, but they've all come and gone.
Absolutely.
And there's a reason for that. Guess what? It's a properly stressful
Absolutely.
Job.
It demands a lot of you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's so much more all-encompassing than, say, the creative director role, which I was previously doing.
Yeah, you've got clients, you've got work, people. You've got people, you've got owners.
Absolutely.
Fine. So then, at what part of that process of Frankie leaving and you eventually getting the job, did you think, I tell you what, I quite fancy this. How did it all work out?
Well, I was lucky insofar as I'd had a really fantastic tutelage in how to run a business, or certainly a division, at Shine.
Right. All that time ago. Okay.
You know, I was...
It's interesting. All the other stuff you'd done,
and it was Rachel Bell. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, I'd always enjoyed the creative side of PR, but the beauty of PR is you get to do everything. So at Shine...
Well, you certainly used to. There's an interesting discussion as whether he's become more specialist, but
I still think there is, you know, the lion's share of people get to do a lot of get a broad experience of the various facets of it. But I remember Rachel just taught me so much about what it was to be a business person. You know, she developed my PR talent, she encouraged my creativity, but she also showed me what it was like to run a business, run a division, you know, run a profitable division. You know, there's the first...
She's quite strict on that, isn't
she?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I've done a couple of interviews with her now. There's not a lot of discussion to be had.
Absolutely. It's her way or the highway. But it was what I needed and what I benefited from. And it was the first time I ever heard the phrase that income is vanity and profit is sanity.
Right.
And that's always stuck with me. And so much of what I learned under Rachel stayed with me, whether that was at my time at Slice or running Glass Jar. And even at Mischief, you know, she imbued such a rigour and a discipline about what it meant to run a business.
So that gave you the sort of the insight to the P&L, running the P&L element
Absolutely,
to it.
Yeah.
But within you, did you always want that job? Or I don't know, did Alex Big say,
He's
I'll tell you what,
Greg. Very persuasive, Alex.
It's
quite persuasive.
Was it his fault?
I mean, let's be honest. When we knew Frankie was going, my instinct wasn't to go for that role.
Okay.
Because I was on a pretty sweet deal, right? As creative director, working on some fantastic clients at a great agency, being well paid, why would necessarily I want to shift into a role which I knew would be much more demanding?
Yeah.
But then as I thought about it and as I had conversations both with Alex and various other people, I realised that it would be a fantastic experience and it would be something that I could...
It's an interesting choice of word.
Yeah, it would be, absolutely. Yeah. And for me to grow and develop and see what I was capable of.
Yeah. And well, your CV's very good for it, isn't it? I mean, you know, you've...
Absolutely.
You've been involved in your own startup,
Absolutely.
Which we'll come on to, which is a fantastic learning curve. You've been involved at Shine. You know what I mean? So it's not like it's a massive punt. It's if you're going to design a CV to someone to step up into that role, you're as good as anyone's, isn't it?
And I hadn't. It's not as if I'd been a pure creative director for the previous 15 years.
Exactly.
You know, I'd had enough experience, enough leading agencies to mean that it gave me the confidence that I could do that role.
Exactly. You'd had other experience in other businesses doing different things.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Now, on that theme, what I really like about your story is, I mean, I know you're not a pure PR creative, but that's been your most recent job. And you've made it to the most senior job within an agency.
Yeah.
Is that something you see? I mean, I could very happily argue in a debate that we're going to see more of that. Do you know what I mean? I suspect that debate will never happen. But it's not a great surprise that someone in your from the creative part of the business has come to be the MD. Do you think that's going to be part of a trend?
I think it depends on the nature of the agency.
Okay.
If I think about Mischief, you know, such a strong creative culture, such a strong reputation, it absolutely made sense that whoever is at the helm has that creative passion, that experience, that belief in the power of creativity.
Yeah, but there's not too many creative agencies out there that are not making a beeline for the creative credentials of the business, are there?
How do you mean?
Well, most consumer PR firms are saying they want to be creative. Yeah. So I would have thought, therefore, the leadership might well end up going towards that creative skill set.
I think we will see more of it. I think as I say, I benefited from having an all-round experience, which meant that I could bring the creative impetus and the creative expertise, but also have enough of experience to be able to take on what is a much bigger and more developed role than the creative director role.
Sure.
So I think, could a pure play creative step into the managing director role without any previous experience relevant to that role? I think it would be very challenging.
Big ask. Yeah.
A very big ask. But I've had 22 years in this industry in a combination of running my own thing, running teams, running divisions, which meant that I was well placed to be able to take on that role.
Okay. Now, you describe yourself, going back to your Shine days, as a lost soul before you joined Shine.
Yeah.
You know, where are we now? What year are we in? Just
so I joined Shine in 2002.
Okay.
So I've been in the industry for about 5 years.
Prior to that. Okay.
So I say my career started at Shine. I mean, technically it didn't, but I guess, to all intents and purposes, it did. You know, I'd worked at two agencies prior to that.
And why were you a lost soul?
Because I don't know if I'd been particularly well managed, bar a couple of rare exceptions in the 5 years. I don't think that I'd had my potential tapped into. I felt a little disillusioned with the industry.
In what way?
I think my experiences and most people's experiences are formed by the environments in which they find themselves. And if those environments aren't particularly rewarding or they're not focused on development, there's not necessarily great work being done, PR doesn't necessarily feel like the best
industry to be in. Right. I mean, all of that it could be true today, couldn't it?
Absolutely.
What I was alluding to, actually.
You know, so the culture I found myself in wasn't a culture that encouraged me to thrive and be excited by the work I was doing. Until I met Rachel.
Okay.
And then everything changed.
Right. Are you still in contact with Rachel?
Yeah.
Right, it's a cool story, isn't it?
PR Week Awards last year.
Right. You're not allowed to mention that on here, but we'll have to edit that out.
Okay.
No, I'm just joking. you've talked a bit about it, but I hadn't quite appreciated that the extent of that, I suppose, the transformation was... impact, I suppose, of meeting Rachel Bell on your career.
Yeah.
So I get it from a business. She taught you how to run a business, which is now to June Goodstead to your current role within Mischief. But it was, she obviously played a more of a mentor role before that with you.
She gave me confidence in myself.
Okay. And you didn't have that before?
No, I remember.
Do you mean just in your job, or do you mean in your broader self?
I probably meant it's actually both.
Okay.
But I think so much of my worth and value are probably informed by the job, because that's where you're spending the lion's share of your time.
Yeah.
I don't think you can separate the two, and probably still can't, to be honest. I remember the first week that I joined, I was a camp manager, I think, and she handed me a Polaroid brief, new business pitch, and she said, I want you to write this. And my first response was, I can't do that, no chance. And she said, well, I wouldn't have effing hired you unless I thought you could do it in the nicest possible way. So I wrote it, I won it, and it was like the starter gun.
Right.
And everything followed from there, because I finally had someone that had the faith in me that I probably should have had in myself, that was willing to kind of challenge me, to dangle me over the edge, but was there to support me if I needed it.
But for you, who responded by writing the Polaroid brief, was there another three people who didn't quite have
absolutely,
such a happy ending?
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
It was a genuine test.
She also knew who she was hiring. She was brilliant at spotting that talent that just needed a little bit of a shove.
Right.
So most people that she'd hired actually did respond like that because she could spot that in people.
Right. Well, I wonder what that is. What is that?
I don't know. It's some...
bit of hunger? Bit of something.
Hunger, a bit of kind of... something to prove.
Okay, chip on your shoulder.
Chip on the shoulder. Okay. I think a lot of the people in that management team that I quickly ascended to at Shine were of a very similar nature, all very driven, all with a point to prove, all coming from a place of wanting to kind of show someone something, you know?
And she tapped
into that.
That's a nice insult.
Yeah.
A nice insult, nice insight.
She's good with those as well.
Now, you launched your own business called Glassjar.
Glassjar, yeah.
Which, when we were talking before, I thought it was really interesting how honest you were, that you launched it with all the best intentions, but it obviously didn't quite work out. and you eventually just went, you know what, running my own business is not for me. So just talk us around how that all worked out, you know, how it started, what went wrong, and your conclusions at the end of it all.
Yeah, well, it came at a really pivotal time for me. I think it was about 2011. I'd finished Shine in 2009. I'd had a couple of years, a couple of agencies, and nothing had ever really quite matched what I'd had at Shine.
Okay.
And I was thinking, is this the industry for me? Do I need to go and do something else? I'd been in it for 14, 15 years. And I had a good friend of mine, Simon, who I'd known from university, he worked in digital marketing. And he said, before you give it all up, why don't you give it a go with me? Let's do our own thing. And I thought, you know, why not? Let's give it a go. We very quickly won Bacardi business, which I'd worked on previously at Shine.
When you say the business, do you mean the PR brief?
Yeah, the PR brief, the consumer PR brief.
Wow. Which is an amazing win.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I mean, that is...
And we did take it off Shine. Sorry, Rachel. but she was fine.
I bet she wasn't.
No, probably not. and we did an incredible job. And for the fact that Glassjar didn't survive the 3 years that I was working on it, I will never regret doing it because of the work we did for Bacardi. And because of the campaign we delivered, because of the ideas we had, because of the relationships we formed, it was fantastic. And I felt so proud of what we'd done, starting from nothing, out of a little workspace near London Bridge, to working on one of the biggest alcohol brands.
Well, it's an incredible win, isn't it?
It was incredible, yeah. And we won Bacardi Global off the back of that. We won Bacardi Oakheart, which is their dark rum. We did some work with Unilever. We did some work with American Express. We worked for ASOS.
I mean, amazing brands for
amazing.
A startup.
Yeah.
The obvious question is, why didn't it work out? Yeah.
Well, we just come to the end of our first year with Bacardi, and we had great client relationships, and one by one they left, went to various other businesses.
It's so annoying that happens.
And someone came in, and from the moment that person came in, we knew we were doomed.
Yeah.
And it was then just a case of trying to manage it. And we picked up a couple of other pieces of business. They were project work to tide us over into the next year. And it came to, I think, 2014. And we had two pitches on the table. One was Samsung Global, which for two blokes in a room was quite a thing.
Yeah.
And the other one was for another alcohol company, WJ Grant. And the problem we had is that both myself and Simon were creative types. Loved coming up with ideas. Would sit in a room and just come up with ideas. And we watched, I don't know if you know it, the Johnny Rotten, the Sex Pistols on Bill Grundy, where the Sex Pistols are very provocative. And we had quite a punk ethos. And we were very challenging when we got the briefs. And it was a case of, well, you don't need to be doing this. We want to, you know, we're going to tell you what you need to be doing. A bit of arrogance. And what we lacked was someone sensible in a room going, hang on a second, boys. You may want to do this, but I don't think they're going to buy this. You need to dial it down a bit. So we lacked that element. And because of that, I think we were probably a little too challenging, a little too bold. I remember we pitched to Samsung. We pitched this, you know, integrated creative idea, all bells and whistles. We thought it was wonderful. And it got to the end and the client said, I was just looking for a couple of survey ideas, really. And I think we both looked at each other at that point and we were like, the game is up.
Right.
Like, we're done.
Right.
Obviously, we didn't win the pitch. And I think at that
point, gutted.
Yeah. And we both agreed that actually we'd given it a good go. We probably weren't necessarily the best people to be running our own agency.
Well, also, that possibly, but also maybe you got a bit unlucky, right? I mean, sometimes you get a bit unlucky we've had... All businesses have that, don't they? You get in there with a nice new client and then so-and-so goes and leaves and here we go.
Well, that was our bad luck because I think if that client hadn't left, I suspect I would probably still be doing Glassjar.
Yeah. And actually, would you be better or, you know, would you be happy or not? There is an argument, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Maybe you know, you're obviously doing a lot of mischief, so it's all, you know, maybe these things work out.
And I'm pretty good at working for someone.
Right.
You know.
Well, that's the other element. Yeah. I was going to talk about that, because I think there's a danger that we all think, oh, everyone needs to start their own business, and isn't that the way to go?
Mm.
And coming from someone who's done that, it's hard, right?
Absolutely.
It's proper hard.
Yeah.
So, you know, just talk to me about, you know, why you think, actually, having done both, when you sit back and think about it, you're happy where you are.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you're running your own business, you are responsible for everything, right? You're responsible for the business coming through the doors. You're responsible for keeping the business happy. Of course, you have team members, but ultimately that responsibility rests on your shoulders, or yours and your business, mine and my business partner's shoulders.
Mm.
And it's quite a thing to take on. I would never have... I'm very glad of the experience, but do I sit there and think, I wish I was still my own boss? No.
Right.
No. I kind of like structure. I kind of like knowing what I'm going to get paid every month, yeah. which you never do when
there's
you're running
your own
business.
There's an FD who makes sure
Absolutely.
That you're not all about to run out of money.
You know, I'm part of a machine which helps to generate new business. I'm an agency that has a great reputation and attracts business that way.
Sounds all right, doesn't
you
it?
You know what? Yeah. It's pretty good. Yeah. I loved running my own business, but I don't sit there and think, I wish I was still doing it.
Right.
I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And of course, each has their frustrations, but on the balance, I've got no great desire to go and launch another agency.
Yeah, I think a lot of people only have one startup in them.
Yeah.
And I think I'd include myself on that.
Yeah.
You know, very true. Now, on a totally different tack, you surprised me when we chatted before. You are a qualified psychotherapist.
I am.
I mean, what how come? What happened there?
Well, I've always been fascinated with people.
Right.
And behaviour, and the reasons why people behave the way they do. And a lot of what we do in PR is about that. It's about being able to understand people. It's public relations. It's relating to people. So the two aren't as...
So this wasn't a... Greg had a thought to go and do something, a different career at some point. This was a qualification you did to... be better at public relations?
No, I think I think it was more the former. I think it was a vague sense that at some point the PR game might not be for me long term, right? I don't know, 50, 60, right. And especially in a creative role.
So when did you become a psychotherapist?
I started my studies in 2013 and qualified 4 years later.
Okay. Right. So it's a proper...
It's
not a little 6 month effort.
No,
is
it was three separate courses.
Blimey.
Part time, obviously,
so
it fit in around my studies. But lots of volunteer hours as a psychotherapist counsellor in drug and alcohol abuse in Camberwell, in Elephant and Castle. A lot of essay writing, a lot of research, a lot of training.
Right. So it's an area you're interested in.
Yeah.
It's an area that makes you probably better at your current job.
For sure.
And if you ever think, you know what, I've had enough of being a
Absolutely.
CEO of a PR firm or MD of a PR firm, you might go and do that.
Yeah.
Fine.
That's my retirement.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. And what is it? Because it's a thing, actually, I think it was probably a theme in the earlier podcast, but empathy just kept coming up, isn't it? Empathy and understanding people.
Yes.
It's such a absolutely crucial, it's a link between every part of public relations, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And therefore, it's therefore what you're doing is you're trying to plug that into the creative process in essence. Is that right?
And being able to listen to what people are really saying,
because
as a counsellor, people sit in front of you and they tell you what you think you want to hear, or they give you a story. My job as a counsellor is to get beneath that story.
I'm starting to feel paranoid.
Everyone says that. Everyone thinks I'm analysing them, I am, obviously. But
when you're talking about that, are you talking about your clients, or are you talking about going out into the, you know, from the work perspective? What do you do? So I get how if I'm your client, Greg can maybe work out what I'm thinking better than the next person. But are you also thinking about the level of insight you bring to a campaign in terms of the customer stuff and all that?
Yeah, and understanding what motivates people, understanding collectively how people respond and react and beneath the veneer and beneath the facade that we all have. So there's a huge amount of crossover. And also, you know, in empathy is a core element of the psychotherapeutic model that I studied. And, you know, when you're sitting down with staff, it's like trying to understand what's really going on and really listen to what they're saying rather than, I guess, take it at face value or miss stuff, because that's when miscommunication occurs and that's where fallouts can potentially happen. So I couldn't do the job that I'm doing now without having undergone the 4 years of training that I had as a counsellor.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. It made me a much more rounded individual.
I bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
But hard work.
Hard work. Yeah. Hard work.
Because what were you doing at that point? You were.
I was at Glassjar.
Was it? Okay.
And I was. Then I went to Splendid. And Alec at Splendid was very, very fair and good in terms of creating the space for me to do my studies and my work. So I'll be forever grateful for him for that. And then Frankie, equally.
So the Splendid bit was a bit of, you came out of your own gig.
Yeah.
You needed a job. Yeah. You obviously knew Alec.
I did know Alec, yeah.
And you were probably a bit overqualified for that job, but it worked for all parties at
Absolutely.
The time.
Absolutely. And I did about 18 months there and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Right.
Really good people.
And it got you back in the game, so
back
to speak.
Back in the game.
And then...
Whilst allowing me to do the... To get my studies, continue my studies, get them
it's
up
It's a nice...
Running.
Yeah, it's a really interesting career, isn't it?
Yeah.
What I love about it is it's had a few false dawns and a few dark alleys.
A few left turns.
And you've come back and stuck two fingers up at a few people.
Well, I think,
don't know.
Yeah,
or maybe yourself, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, 22 years in, it's not been a straight line.
No.
It's been a lot more interesting because of that.
And what is quite fascinating is that you've... You know, lots of people build up a career portfolio, but what you've, as far as I can work out, you've done a job here, a job there, a job, and actually the sum of all those jobs makes you the right person to be MD of Mischief right now.
Yeah.
But what you haven't done, you know, your previous job wasn't your crowning glory to become the MD of Mischief.
No.
It was just another part of the jigsaw that actually now, if you take you as a whole...
Yeah.
Works,
yeah.
Which is it's kind of random, but it's a nice story, isn't it?
It's a great story.
I mean, you couldn't have designed it, I don't think.
No,
it's just happened.
No, absolutely. And I've benefited from working for some really great people, and I've learned an awful lot from them.
But very different, or quite different jobs.
Absolutely,
at various
yeah.
different parts. You
but
know,
I'm also a sponge. I soak a lot of stuff up, and I take the best parts from my time with Rachel, my time with Nadia at Slice.
Right.
Alec, Steve at MSC Saatchi, where I was there for about a year.
Right.
All the experience I took from my own gig, you know, it all soaks in and it's all up there somewhere. And it's great to be able to draw on that.
Yeah. And the psychotherapy bit.
And the psychotherapy, you know.
It's, and the creative bit.
Yeah.
And you now report into Tyler's Big.
I do.
Right? So that's quite fun, is it? Because there was a bit of a restructure there. So just talk us through what happened there and the thinking behind it.
Yeah, so Alex has been the CEO of MHP for about 3 years now, maybe. Done a fantastic job there. And over
having
the,
come from Edelman.
Having come from Edelman.
And MHP wasn't having a great time when he joined, was
no.
it?
No.
So,
you know.
It was a bit of a... I don't know if turnaround's putting it a bit strong, but certainly a bit of renewal, put it that way.
I absolutely agree. He's done a fantastic job. And in the last year or so, we are working much, much closer together.
Right.
As agencies.
And that's quite... knowing the personalities involved, I can see that would work. But it's, you know, the idea that a quite a serious corporate PR firm works closely with... a creative consumer PR firm, it does a few warnings bells start going off, don't they?
No.
But knowing the personalities involved, I can see it working. But yeah, go on. So
what an entity that creates, though.
Okay.
You think about it.
Yeah, go on.
And the number of briefs that have come across my desk in the last year that want creativity, but also want corporate reputation, that want risk, risk capability. You know, that want an understanding of the corporate world. You know, they are coming thick and fast, those kind of briefs.
So that was part of the reason behind it, was
it?
Absolutely.
Wasn't,
it wasn't just a moment of consolidation. It was, right. So
it makes sense in the market. You know, I was at a credentials meeting yesterday, and it was me from Mischief and a couple of guys from MHP, and I just think it creates a really powerful narrative. You know, we can handle everything. You want the creative flair and the strategic smartness of Mischief.
Well, they're not binary things, are they?
No.
You want consistency between the two.
Absolutely. And we're able to present, and then we're able to kind of share that expertise, and we're able to kind of demonstrate that as a single entity, we're pretty powerful and pretty compelling proposition.
So you're starting to work together more?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
We share a lot of clients already. So E.ON, Coca-Cola, HelloFresh, Huawei.
Right.
We're pitching together. The guys over there are fantastic. Alex has got a brilliant leadership team over there. I've got a brilliant leadership team at Mischief. We complement each other. And I think it's a really exciting prospect for 2020.
All right.
makes us...
So you obviously have loads of your own clients as well.
Absolutely,
but you share
we share a fair few clients. We share a lot of kind of tools. We share a lot of thinking and capabilities. So it's I'm incredibly excited about what we can do together.
And the just talk a little bit about that. We've touched on it a bit before, but the kind of work that Mischief does, because most consumer PR agencies, and I get this because I see it every day. It's not necessarily widely seen, but there is a little angle of work which when I can see it. God, I don't know why, but I can see that's a Mischief piece of work. You're in that bubble, so to speak.
Yeah.
So how would you define what you do?
Well, I think what we do has definitely evolved. I think there is a spirit that has remained the same for those 14 years, and that spirit is, it is a creative, it is impactful, it's attention grabbing. Certainly in the first few years when I was working downstairs and Mischief were upstairs at the Shine offices, the sense was it was quite stunty work, and I think that's a lot of the reputation was founded on that. Mitch and Dan might disagree, but that was the take, really. And if you look at the work we do now, we still do that kind of work, but we do a much broader range of work as well. We do much more integrated work. We do... I hate the word grown-up work, but, we work for grown-up big clients, who need grown-up
creativity.
So the work's
changed a bit and the clients has changed a bit.
The work has changed a bit, the clients have changed a bit, whilst retaining that same energy and attitude and values that I think Mischief have always had. And that's, as a steward of this ship, I need to retain those values. I want to retain those values. But the nature of what we do naturally evolves,
I think the nature of work industry-wide evolves a bit as well.
Absolutely.
And has gone a bit more that way, isn't it?
I agree. It's slightly less frivolous, slightly more serious, slightly more purpose-driven, slightly more grown up, but still retaining that sense of fun and energy that Mischief has always had, and I hope will continue to have.
Okay. And we talked a bit about the integration between and the opportunities it brings between a corporate and a consumer PR shops with MHP and Mischief within Engine, that you've got an interesting perspective of integration, and it's the most overused word possibly after purpose that we've got going.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to tap into your. I'm not suggesting you're going to come up with any particular answers, but you've got an interesting perspective between as an MD of a consumer PR shop within a wider group with advertising companies within it. To what extent do you work with your advertising creative peers within the business, and to what extent do you not? I suppose because you're together you can work, presumably you can work together, but at the same time you're also competing for stuff. So
yeah, not so much in a competition. I think we've certainly worked closer with our advertising equivalents over the last year. So WCRS now, Engine, Creative.
So quite recently, over the last
12 years. My feeling is, I've been at Mischief for 4 years, and I think certainly for the first couple of years, I don't know how much Engine knew who we were, what we did, what we could do.
Right.
And then about 15 months ago, Jim Moffat took over a CEO of Engine, and I think that's transformed things. Jim absolutely knows the power of PR. He's seen it firsthand. He thinks we're a really valuable asset. And we're now getting asked to be involved in the process a lot earlier in integrated pieces of work rather than what was happening before, which was typically kind of, we've done an ad, can you do some PR for it? Which, as any PR person knows, the answer is no, we can't. So if you look at the work we do for E.ON, for instance, that's a properly integrated piece of work, which not only involves Engine Creative, but also Engine Transform. And there's no competition there. We know what our role is. The ad guys know what their role is. We work very nicely together. The client's very happy. It's a really good example of integration done well and done properly and to the benefit of both the client and also Engine.
Right.
So I'm keen for more of that. And as I say, because people have a sense more of now of what we're capable of doing and how we're capable of helping, if we're brought into the process early enough, we're not just there at the end to PR the ad or to host the launch event. We can really help to make the work talked about and shared, which is what anyone wants for their work, to be famous for it and to win awards for it. And I certainly think Jim has really driven that and driven greater recognition of what we can do and brought us into more conversations, which I'm really grateful for.
Brilliant. Greg Jones, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.